Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of Character Reveal. Once again, it's your co-host, Dom, aka Brother Dom, anywhere you want to find me, and I am joined, per the usual, with my marvelous co-host. Would you like to tell the people who you are?
Absolutely. I am Stephanie, aka Captain Steph on Twitter, aka The Snow Queer on Tumblr, and we are joined once again by an awesome guest today. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hello, I'm Chevy Ray. You can find me on Twitter at Chevy Ray, and I'm a game developer.
Nice.
Awesome. So I've been kind of excited about one of your projects, and we'll get into all that stuff, but before we really get into the meat of things, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good today. Got a lot of work done before I sat down to do this, and I'll probably get a bunch more work done afterwards.
Awesome. So we won't take up too much of your time unless you kind of get in the groove of things. Steph, how are you doing today?
I've been better. America's been better.
Yes, so we are looking to the Great White North and kind of in the past because time zones. So hopefully we have a good conversation today. So Chevy Ray, what's the game you're working on for those who don't know?
I'm working on a game called Eichenfell, which is a turn-based RPG that takes place in a sort of a magic school for like kids.
Awesome, awesome. Very cool. So, yes, it looked really cool. Full disclosure for the people who care about that thing, I did back the game. I feel no shame in that, and I think it's kind of ridiculous that we do that, but just so people know, your game has some pretty cool graphics and a good storyline. How'd you really get to this type of game?
I've been trying to make a turn-based RPG for the last 10 years, and I've had a lot of false starts. Some of them have been more similar and less similar than Eichenfell. And this is the first time I really picked up enough steam and got it going. This feels like this is the one.
Nice, nice. And how'd you really get to the story of it?
The story really was inspired by Rainbow Rowell's novel, Carry On.
That's my favorite book of like the entire book, like of all of the books I read the year it came out. It was like my number one.
Carry On is my favorite book right now. It's extremely good. I've read it 4 times. The audiobook is amazing. So it's inspired by Carry On. I listened to the story and I got so excited about so many different ways of telling a story. And it really just like, it's not that like it's, I wanted to tell that story. It's just that it hit all the sparks in me that had a story and it inside me, and I kind of like dug it all up, and the idea just flowed really, really naturally from there. And so that book was responsible a lot of other things, but that book was like the trigger that got me started.
Okay.
Oh man, I'm not a gamer, but I might have to play this one.
That's good to hear.
Gosh.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's been an interesting however many years for games. There's been so many kind of subjects and game styles and that sort of thing. So it was nice to see a game that had a female protagonist for one, and also a game that had a plot that wasn't about, you know, a dead parent or some kind of thing like that. So it is definitely refreshing to see. One of the things that drew me in, just to put it out there, is, you know, I follow one of the composers on there. So how did you end up working with those composers?
Oh, Ivy and Sarasu. I actually have no idea if I'm pronouncing their names right, but I'll go with that.
I was hoping you know, because I could just kind of
that too. I think it might be Ivy and Sarasu. So I'll say Ivy and Sarasu. So they're the composers for Steven Universe. They do all the music, not the singing, obviously, and stuff. But they compose all the background music and the songs. They take stuff from Rebecca and they write... they turn it into the actual music that goes into the production of the show. I'm really just a big fan of their work, and I knew that they were kind of getting close to wrapping up a project, so I figured I'd send an email. So I actually sent Sarasu a message over Twitter and was like, hey, if you guys are available, I really, really would like to talk to you about doing the music for my game. Like, I'm not talking free, I'm talking a full paid gig, all this. Let me know. And he just responded quite enthusiastically. So I sent them a big email with a giant description, a bunch of screenshots, and a bunch of stuff about the game that I hadn't really released yet, you know. And they seemed really receptive. Or they were really receptive. We started talking from there.
Awesome. So it really is as easy as the people say. So they're would you say their music style kind of like fits the theme of what you were going for your game? Or you kind of how's that back and forth been?
We're still working on the music style, actually. I want the music style. I'm designing a bunch of the game first and getting sort of an idea of getting something started, and then they're going to start figuring out how their music's going to sound for the game. And then we're going to kind of feed off each other from there. I want music to be a part of the game kind of early on. So you can kind of build the theme of the game kind of around the music, and likewise, because that's always my favorite when that happens. I always think some of the most like wholesome games have that approach.
Yes, absolutely. Every game that I've really fallen in love with or been a huge fan has had a huge musical influence on it. Not just in the scenes, but aesthetically as well. I had a big rave about, well, forever, about Sonic games, but also about Splatoon when it came out, and Overwatch. And they all kind of use music to be, they're not just there, they're not incidental, they kind of fit the whole message of the game. Like with Splatoon, it was a lot of kind of messy but clean kind of things, you know, synthesizer but with natural instruments. It really fit the theme of squids making a mess of the place, so I'm looking forward to seeing what kind of music you guys come up with.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it too. We want to experiment with a few things. They have some ideas, so I'm pretty excited to see where that goes. Splatoon had a great soundtrack. It was, even if it wasn't like really, really good music, some of it was, but it was really distinct. You can just, you know, Splatoon music the moment you hear it. I think that's always a really good sign. And also Sonic music, I think, is totally underrated.
Ooh, we are speaking the same language. I'm already a fan. I wish I would have found your work sooner. Well, speaking of your work, and you know, I hate to make this just a like a gush fest or anything. You know, I haven't played Tutu. I haven't really had a chance to play your games all that much. But looking at them, a lot of them seem to have like a really cute aesthetic, like a cute feel to them. Like your pixels are very nice and all that. How'd you kind of get to that kind of tone with your games?
My games go back and forth a lot. They go from being really dark to like obscenely cute and colorful and explosive. and they phase back and forth between those two. It's mostly just like a mood thing. Especially for the last 5 years, I've had a lot of like lows, like really long low periods, and a lot of really high periods, and a lot of sort of mixed periods. And the darker games tend to be made in mixed periods where I'm kind of like really productive and hyper, but feeling horrible. And the bright, colorful games are when I'm just like feeling on top of the world. And like, they usually are made in a ridiculously short amount of time. Like I'll make I made Chunkadelic, which has 9 games in it with one other person. And we made it in like 30 hours. So we made 9. That's like, that's like a game every 3 hours or something crazy like that.
It looks to, just looking at the screenshot, because I'm a professional podcaster, so I have a page open, it looks to be like my kind of jam. Just the screenshot looks to be, looks like Mega Man versus Toad Man or something.
That's one of the games. Yeah, there's 9 games in it, and they're all sort of inspired by retro games, but they have sort of, they're weird, like reduced, minimal versions of them that are, have kind of their own weird made-up rules. Most of my like shorter games are like pretty shallow, but also pretty like, they usually experiment with one or two like really weird mechanics, but they don't like take them too much further. They're usually interesting to try out, though.
Nice, nice. A lot of I definitely like experimentation and playing with concepts. So cool stuff there. So going back to Eichenfell, you said that you've been trying to get a turn-based RPG. Do you draw any inspirations gameplay-wise from any other games?
Yeah, quite a few. I really like the Mario RPG series. Pretty much the whole series up to Paper Mario 2. I like Paper Mario, Paper Mario 2, Mario RPG, and I really like the handheld Superstar Saga, that series as well.
Okay.
I think they're all
much partners in time so much.
Yeah, I think they're really inventive, and they like what they do with the genre. I felt like they found this mix between like WarioWare type games and RPGs, and it felt really good. It didn't feel gimmicky. It felt like they really used the mechanics in a relatively deep and interesting way, and I like that. And also, I'm kind of a twitchy gamer. Like I play TF2 and like fast paced games, but I really love RPGs, and RPGs are so slow. So sometimes I kind of like sometimes I kind of like to mix my interests in a game, and I feel like the reaction time like RPGs do that.
Oh, for sure.
I love grids, and I love games that take place on grids a lot. I don't know why I'm for some reason obsessed with grids. I do all my notes on grid paper. It's just one of those kinks. And so I like games like Robo Trek, which is an old SNES game. I think it's called Slapstick in Japan, which is kind of broken and weirdly mistranslated game, but it has some really interesting mechanics in it, and there's no RPG like it even to this day. Mega Man Battle Network's really interesting. I love that it's...
Oh, that game's so good.
I love how the series is like on a grid, but it's real time, and the, but it's so obtuse. There's like all these chips and mechanics, and it's all cyber themed, and so it's like totally inaccessible to just like compared to like
most people.
Compared to Earthbound or Paper Mario, which are so easy to pick up and they're so simple and like kind of one-dimensional sometimes, but also just simple. Like that game is like, what is happening? It's so Japanese.
What do you, did you have a favorite and least favorite game from that series?
The Mega Man Battle Network?
Yeah, I just really enjoyed that series a lot.
I've only beat the first two, and those are the only ones I've played, and that was like when they came out. I can't even remember them that well.
Oh, okay. Hey, well, if you ever needed an endorsement to go back and play the rest, I will talk all day about going back to play 3 and like 6.
Yeah, I might when I if I get the chance. That'd be really fun to play through them. See how the later series, what they did.
They do some really interesting things. I'd say 4 was the worst one for sure. I think they lost their way with the plot there. It got kind of messy. So just skip that one.
All right.
Did you ever play Advance Wars or anything like that?
I like Advance Wars as well. Advance Wars and Final Fantasy Tactics and like Ogre Battles, those sort of strategy games I really like a lot. I like turn-based strategy where I can just, the game is paused and I can just sit and think. And then it's not, like I like games like StarCraft as well, but I like when the game kind of stops and just lets me chill and play at my own pace a lot. So I like those strategy games. I like having stuff. I like, you know, soldiers and I can place them in units or a bunch of characters and a bunch of equipment and just stuff to mess with. I like that as well. I like to get creative and choose, you know, who gets to wear what or which characters I want to like totally power up and give all the good gear to. I like that kind of stuff. I think it's fun.
Yeah, definitely. I like to something between full customization, not quite that far, but in that same kind of vein. I like that.
Yeah.
So do you have, outside of games, do you have kind of interests that follow in with, like, customization and grids and that sort of thing?
Customization and grids in my normal life? Not so much. My obsession with this sort of stuff is sort of restricted to the digital world. My art, the art that I draw, you'll probably see a lot of similar themes. I tend to be really kind of a little bit stiff. I'm not an artist who has like a real flowing style. It's like all the lines connect perfectly. So you'll see that in my art style. It's kind of a little bit mathematical at times, so it doesn't have that like loose fun feel that a lot of people's art has. But for the most part, no, I'm kind of wild and I'm very excitable and a hand talker. I like playing tennis and riding bikes and stuff like that, so it doesn't really extend too much into my real life.
Okay, yeah, it's the one downside to podcasting is that you can't see all the hand movements, you know. Definitely, I know a lot of hand talkers. I am one. Sometimes when I'm really getting in the groove of podcasting, you can see my hands and my fists. I'm doing it now, but the listeners will never know. Okay, well, that's pretty good stuff. So are there any games that you kind of ever made that you wish you could go back and kind of add a little bit to or that sort of thing?
I made a game called Papillon, and it was a 48-hour game I made, and I made it's kind of like what you'd call a Metroidvania game, where it's like a map to explore, and there's bosses, and you get powers that help you further explore the map, kind of like that. But it was it was one of my darker games, and it was one of my games that had like a really strong central theme, and was like just kind of like a nice length. It took about an hour to play through, and I felt like if I had polished it up a bunch more and kind of fixed all the bad level design and some of the bad stuff about it, it could have been a lot better. Also, I had like a group of friends, Power Up Audio, did a bunch of sound effects and music for it and background ambience. And like I had all this stuff added, but I never released a version with all that in it. And I never finished implementing it all. And I still kind of regret that a lot.
Hey, well, there's always time, and we always have to look for more time.
Yeah, so that's kind of like the biggest one. But mostly I wish I could go back to like all the projects that I just never finished and either finish them, like mostly collaborations, things I'd started with people and we were in it together and they like bailed on. I wish I could go back to those and either finish them or just not start them in the first place.
Right.
So I could just like have like spared those people that spared them that disappointment of like having to work with me when I was in a bad time or something like that.
Wow. Okay. So do you see any kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Like a difficulty with collaboration events and that sort of thing?
Collaboration's hard. Teams are difficult because they need a leader, and it's hard to be a leader when you're someone like me and you actually do so many roles in the game. Like you're the artist or the programmer, or you're the game designer and the programmer. Both of those are so like all encompassing. And right. I feel like a lot of people who start up teams underestimate like how much work it is just like keeping everybody together and working and motivated and in contact. And it's super, super hard. And yeah, I'm never going to like underestimate it again.
Okay.
So I respect producers and directors a lot more now. I have a few friends who are those and I know how hard they work and how like I've seen the fruits of some of their work. And it's like, okay, yeah, I can't believe I never gave you guys respect, but so that's, yeah, that's a big part of it. But also it's just like getting too excited about an idea that isn't good. Like sometimes you get really excited about an idea, but then like a week later you're like, oh, that was actually a dumb idea. I was really stoked on it at the time because I got kind of tunnel vision, but the idea actually ended up being a little bit like vapid.
Okay.
I think that's a big problem. People get too excited and they take off too fast with an idea. And that was a big problem of mine for a really long time. I would get really excited. And then later on, when you had to keep working and get through that big middle stretch of the game, it was hard because the game didn't have a middle stretch. It was all the exciting stuff was done. That's all there was. And you couldn't get anything more out of it, but I wanted to. So one of my big things with Eichenfell has been like slow burn everything. Don't make any super impulsive decisions. Like everything you want to add to the game, think about it, write it down, maybe work a little bit on it, but then take a break, come back to it a few days later. Does it still seem like a good idea? Maybe it is. And sort of like that. Even I worked on the game for like 6 months before I even kickstarted it. Like I was like, I don't know. And over that course of that 6 months before I kickstarted it, the core mechanics changed like 6 times.
Oh,
they were that's interesting. They were so bad before. And I worked the story got workshopped a bunch. A lot of the core themes and all that stuff remained the same, but the mechanics and how it played and how it felt changed so much. And it's so much better now. But if I had been like, hey, I got this game idea, make a bunch of art, make a prototype and kickstart it in a month, it probably either wouldn't have succeeded or it would have succeeded. And then I'd have been locked into making a bad game.
Oh, well, congratulations on taking a thoughtful approach to kickstarting in-game design. I feel like a lot of people definitely underestimate, like you said, some of these softer skills and the things, you know, like with producing and design, but also, is this really a good idea worth pursuing? Do you have any kind of testing to know if, will this be fun later?
Yeah, there's a few things. One is to wait till later and then check it.
right.
That's the slow burn thing. Like you have to give things time, but I respect that not everybody has time. If you're broke or you're short of money, sometimes you have to kind of make impulsive or sudden decisions.
Sure.
But the other thing is just to show it to people. A lot of people are a little bit too precious with their ideas. You'll hear this from a lot of experienced designers and developers, like just show your stuff and get used to showing your stuff and get used to people being disappointed in it, because the sooner you get over that, the sooner you can start changing it and improving it. And sometimes don't underestimate how small changes can sometimes take a bad idea into being a good one. Like with some things in Eichenfell, they were bad and I was like, darn, this is bad, this sucks, like whatever. And then I'd be like, okay, and I'd sit down for an hour and I would change a few things. And then the next person I'd get to test it, all those problems would be gone. All I had to do was change a few things. It wasn't a bad idea, it just needed work.
Do you have any examples you can share with us or are willing to?
Okay, yeah, I do. A big example is with the way the perspective and the collision worked. I had a mixed perspective, like a Zelda 1 style, where the walls are kind of all four directions, the characters are upright. That was a horrible idea. that poses a lot of gameplay problems because my game has a Z level, like the characters can jump and there's height, and that suddenly is a mess because I wanted some objects in the middle to have like a higher height. So that was cool. But in my editor, my actual game editor, I only had one layer for tiles. No, I had two layers for tiles. I had background tiles and foreground tiles. So I'd make my background tiles my foreground tiles, but things that were certain height, if they jumped up, they would go behind the foreground tiles. So the bottom of a tree would be a background tile and the top of the tree would be a foreground tile. So you can imagine
that could cause issues.
When you're standing behind the tree, it looks great because you're behind the top of the tree, and you walk in front and it looks good because you're in front of the base of the tree, which is a background. But when you jump, you suddenly like slice through the tree and it's so bad. So now suddenly you can't, none of your characters can jump. Your tiles are all messed, and it's like you've just got this like broken problem, and you constantly have to design around it, which means sometimes your level design ends up being bad because you're like, you can't make it the way it would be best. And it was bugging me. And also there was this big collision problem where to avoid that, I was just making stuff background tiles and then putting big blocks of collision everywhere so you wouldn't be able to walk behind stuff because you couldn't walk behind it because it was the background. And it was so bad. And people kept thinking they could walk behind stuff because some things they could walk behind, others they couldn't. And I was just seeing people get stuck in rooms and like being like, it's this thing where you play a game and you're like, I think I can do this. Oh, it just looks like I can do that, but I can't. And it's not.
That's always the worst.
Too bad, but it really sucks to feel that when you're playing, and it kind of makes you feel like, oh, if this doesn't work, what else is going to work? Like, so I was just like, oh, man, I hate this. I hate that I have this problem. So I was like, okay, I'm going to fix it. And I thought of a crazy way to fix it. So I sat down and I like rewrote my entire like foreground tile system, and I gave them all like a depth axis. And it meant that all the foreground tiles aren't even tiles anymore. They're all just like sprites generated from the map editor. And so it's a whole lot of work, but it took me about 2 hours, and then it was fixed. And now you could walk behind it in front of things, and everything made sense. And now people don't get lost in rooms anymore. And all my puzzles were working better because people understood the geometry of the rooms. And I was like, oh, it's fixed. I just had to fix it. And I had to watch people play it, watch them hate it, fix it. And now it's good. Like, but I couldn't have done that myself because I was just like, oh, just walk around the tree. It's not a big deal. But they wouldn't. They were like, I can walk behind that tree. Oh, I can't. The game is not letting me. And it was bad. And I just had to stomach that it was bad.
that's such a hard part of being a creator, like dealing with it's constructive criticism, but like you're just dealing with like giving people something you've made and saying, okay, tell me what's wrong with it.
It
gets easier, I think, but it's always hard.
I can tell I've been taking a few approaches. One, criticism's good, like ideas or suggestions, but for the most part, it's hard for people to give those because they don't necessarily know what I'm trying to achieve with the game because it's a pretty complex and large game. So I listen to their feedback anyways, but I get so much more just from watching them. I just watch them play and I can see where they're frustrated or stuck, or I can see the things of the game that aren't explained well or that aren't conveyed well. And I'm just like, ugh. Like, I get so much from that already that I think the game will be better for it if I keep like focusing on that and fixing it.
Yeah, I definitely think that's a positive way to do it because, you know, you look at screenshots or you play it a little bit, and I know there's skills in games where I'm like, oh man, if I could just do this, the game would be so much better. But then it can be some kind of complaint that it's like, well, you said you wanted to be at a sprint, but you never looked bored when you were just walking in some kind of game, for instance. So if you just listen to feedback without watching people, sometimes you kind of paint yourself into a corner where it's like no one really wanted that. They just thought they did.
Mm-hmm.
Also, looking at the cast, you seem to have a decent bit of diversity here. Definitely a strong level of a female cast. Do you have any insight to that? The casting and the social aspect of it?
Not too much. It kind of just flowed naturally. I didn't write the story on my own. I have someone who helps me write the story. And we kind of sit down and come up with a lot of the things in bursts. So that's how all the characters were invented. I have 4 male characters in my game. And that was just a coincidence. Like, that's just not a coincidence. I mean, that was just like circumstance. It just happened that way because when we wrote it, we just chose characters and all that. But no, it's just writing a story, and that's how it ended up.
Okay. Well, definitely a level of appreciation for me. It's always nice to see brown characters. We're not always everywhere, so kudos for that. You've built a story with your Kickstarter that kind of pulled people in, so that was a good thing. Do you have any tips for running a Kickstarter? Is this your first one, or have you done others before?
This is my first one. When I did the Kickstarter, I was living with Greg Lobanov, who actually had successfully launched his Kickstarter a year ago. And I have like four or five other friends who had successfully done Kickstarters. So I'd seen many Kickstarters go from beginning to completion, like even seen them editing the video files, like seen them like from close up. So I knew what a successful Kickstarter looked like. So I kind of had a pretty strong idea. I also knew that the idea I had was strong, not because of like conceit or anything like that, but because I'd been releasing a lot of screenshots and not demos, but GIFs of like mechanics in the game. And the responses I got weren't, "Oh, that looks cool." It was, "Oh my God, I need that now." and that's different. I didn't have a, "Oh, that looks kind of neat" game. I had a, "Oh my God, where has my life been without this game?" Because that's the response I'm getting. That's what people tell me all the time. And so I was like, okay, this is like, I have something here. I have something that people are responding to, and I have to do it justice. And yeah, so basically I just sat down and I just slaved over the Kickstarter for several weeks, and I just tried to make it as good as I could, as clear as I could. But another thing, just like games, I got people to proofread it. I gave it to friends and I gave it to my partner, and I was just like, read this, tell me everything that's wrong with it. Tell me the things you don't understand. Tell me the screenshots that look bad. And they did. and most of their suggestions I took, some I was like, nope, I'm sticking to my guns. Most I would change, but sometimes I would stick to my guns. And there's a few things I did that are things that aren't even advisable. Like you look at every Kickstarter, How to Succeed Kickstarter video, and it's like, do a face-to-face video, record yourself talking, and like have your face so people can identify with you and all that. And I recorded one, and I showed it to my partner, and she was like, no, this is bad, don't do this. So I was like, okay, so I just deleted the file and didn't do one, and it was fine. So I wasn't all scared that it wasn't work because I didn't, you know, hit every how to do the Kickstarter right checkbox. I feel like I just had an idea that people wanted to see, and that was kind of good enough. And I just had to like wrap it in a nice package so that it made sense.
That makes sense. As somebody who's backed a few Kickstarters, I think, you know, you had other things that kind of hit my ticks for something I'm willing to back, is you had something that I could kind of attach to, which in this case was the composers. I've seen them before, but the idea was solid. Like you're saying, I saw the video, because you follow composers to a game, that game could be awful, it could be great, you're just there for the music. But I saw this game and I said, whoa, I can't believe this wasn't on my radar. Like you said, I was like, I need this tomorrow. Kind of dropped a tear when I saw the release date, but it was kind of also, hey, there's going to be care into this. But I was like, oh man. So I didn't need to see a person when I saw the video. The video was concise. It says, here's what the game's about, here's how it works, and here's why you want to play it. So yeah, I think all the tips that are 100% perfect Kickstarter videos are for different projects. So yeah, I mean, you hit your goal, right? So
yeah, it was good. I'm really happy it worked out. I really needed it to work out. I was financially in a pretty bad spot, and so it gave me new life.
Excellent. Well, that's what it's all about. That's why we have these crowdfunding kind of things. And have you found the crowdfunding to be a viable choice, a viable option?
Yeah. One thing I'm surprised about is how little actual interaction there are from backers. There are people who just sit on Kickstarter all day and just back stuff they find. Like, so many randoms that people I know don't follow me on Twitter, they just like found it on Kickstarter and backed it, and then have not spoken since. They never comment. They never like any of the updates. And I don't even know who they are. They just like, here's money, I just have it, have some.
Fairy godparents.
Yeah, it blows my mind. There's so many people out there, and I was like, man, they're giving money to RPGs. Holy. So that's cool, but I'm surprised at how little interaction there are. Some people are they just donate and then they wait. And so
yeah,
I'm like, cool, I can just sit down and work super hard. I don't kind of have to constantly keep everybody in check. I am writing monthly updates, and I try to make them really, really exciting. But even those get like very little interactions. I'll still keep doing them, but I'm just kind of surprised.
Well, I think we're kind of in a climate where, two things from that. I think we're in a climate where people know a little bit more about game design now. Not a ton. There's definitely still some entitled jerks and that sort of thing. But I think when you have a solid expected date, as long as you're on pace for that and you have monthly updates, it's basically let the creator work. If they seem to know what they're doing, maybe we'll start raising a fuss if it gets to that point and we don't have any updates. Maybe then. But I haven't seen a need. I mean, I follow you on Twitter as well, so I haven't seen the need to say, hey, what are you up to? It seems like you're doing what you said you would do.
Yeah, I post a lot of updates, and I'm always pretty clear on like when and what I'm working on. So I'm not really a mystery.
Right. And that's comforting. And as far as people being random on Kickstarter, I don't know really what the impetus is on that. I know I'm privileged enough to have some disposable income. Not a whole ton, but enough to say, you know what, let me look on Kickstarter and see if there's anything. I have no plans of spending money, but I might. I did find a card game on there that seemed kind of interesting that I backed. It wasn't a huge commitment, but it was kind of one of the front page sort of things. I think every now and then people just kind of go on Kickstarter and say, hey, you know what? What's there? Because I see so much from like AAA video games, top board games and all that. Sometimes you want to dig just a little bit and see what the indies are doing. So I think it's a nice place to be.
Yeah, one of my friends backed it and I was like, oh, cool, thanks. And I clicked on his profile and he had backed like 273 games. No,
oh my gosh.
Projects, not games. 273 like projects on Kickstarter.
Holy crap.
My hair just went back. I was like, what? You backed 200? That's like several thousand dollars. Holy moly. Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah. I think that's amazing that people are doing that.
Just give. It's always one of the things. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, they're just giving where they can. And I think that's really cool.
Well, that's, you know, again, as somebody who doesn't, I mean, I guess I work in the creative field with this whole thing, but my main day job is not in the creative field. So my income is pretty much do your job and you'll get paid. But I know a lot of people do live, you know, project to project, live really great spikes, really big valleys. So I think the way it's supposed to work is, you know, people that aren't doing art, you feed into this, you know, you feed into the arts. And I think that that's the way it's supposed to go. We all love music and video games so much. I spend so many hours playing video games and playing, listening to music. So got to give it to those people somehow, you know?
Yeah. I'll just kind of drop this now for people who are listening and they're like, yeah, Kickstarters, or if you do back Kickstarters a lot, if you have like creators or artists you really like check their profiles. A lot of them do have Patreons. Where they release art, like private art to backers and things like that. And they're like, you can pledge monthly and it doesn't even have to be a huge amount. It could be like $3 or $5. And some of these artists and writers make their rent on this. So if you like have people and you want, and Kickstarter's kind of not enough, or you just want to know other things, like really check for Patreons. There's a lot of them now and you can really support a lot of people doing that. So I don't know, just like have a look.
Yeah. I'm really a fan of that. I've seen so many people, you know, prosper or at least make rent through Patreons. And it's really such a lovely thing to see that happen. Do you have a Patreon or anything like that? Or are you pretty much just working on Kickstarter, or is that too private a question?
Just Kickstarter. Yeah, I just working on my game every day. It's so much work.
I wish I had. I admire people that can do that. One of the saving graces for me having the day job is it's not the most fulfilling, I guess, but it's pretty consistent, and I know, like, well, I could feed myself and rent, and I could probably help some other people out, and there's kind of a nice little feedback loop that way, because we talked to some other developers before, and I quite frankly do not have the discipline to wake up and do work without the fear of being fired all the time. So it's, I admire you, all the creative people who can do that.
Thanks. Yeah.
Yeah. I definitely, go ahead.
Yeah, it was when I was working full time and trying to do my creative things, it was outrageously difficult.
Yeah,
I can imagine.
Yeah, I can't. In between this podcast and the blog that we both write for and my own full time job, it's just always like, okay, like I can do X, but it has to be the, like, I can read a book, today, but it has to be a book that I can write about for the blog later, or else I'm going to be behind on this, that, and the other thing. And it's just like, man, I wish this was my full-time job.
Yeah, I found myself being able to do, I can't do X plus Y plus Z, but I can do X plus Y over 2 plus Z over 2. For the non-math folks, it's, I can do 2 things or 3 things and half-ass 2 of them.
That's me making games. I'm like, man, this game is going to have some sweet code and some pretty good game design. A really good story, but the art will be okay. But the music will be great. And I'm like, because that's all I can do. I actually can't do more or I will physically die.
And that's not good for anybody.
Yeah, then you get no RPGs. Then how would you feel?
I'd feel let down. I'd feel like my life was less magical.
I feel kind of
sad. Yeah, that's what I think.
So one of the things I wanted to ask before, and the nature of the show, we get on to different tracks, is you mentioned having a newfound respect for like producers and designers and that sort of thing. Can you speak a little bit on the difference between game design and programming and, I guess, quote-unquote, idea man positions?
Yeah, sure. Well, I'll talk about the roles I do because I know those best. So I actually have some authority on the roles I do. So I was an artist first, and then I kind of became a programmer. I'm self-taught. So as a programmer, I solve the problems that I as a designer do. So I come up with problems as a designer or things I want to achieve. And as a programmer, I have to figure out how to like make those happen. So I'm like, I want battles that are fun, that you're able to plan, that, you know, and these are the controls and how, and then I have to put that together. And there are a million ways to put that together. So a programmer has to kind of like find out the one that works and make a system that's solid and won't break and won't, and like, you know, that the designer can also get a little bit creative with. They're not like stuck with a really one-dimensional system, something that they can like have a means of experimenting with. Better programmers will do that. They'll give designers more power in a structured system that actually like, you know, works really well. So yeah, so as a programmer, I do a lot of that. As a designer programmer, I spend a lot of time with aesthetics. Like I can get right down into the depth of my code and add features that improve the game visually, stuff like that, really well. So that's cool. My big role as a designer is what we talked about before, which is getting feedback, listening to feedback, and allocating time for that, not just being like, you know, getting people to play it eventually, or I'm pretty sure it's good. Like actually saying like, I need to give this to people to watch it happen. And if it's not good, to not be satisfied and to fix it. And like to actually have time for that, to not be like, to not just like forget to allocate time. And then later on be like, my game sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't want to end up in that position.
Yeah. As an artist, you're just trying to like really make everything look good together. And also make sure that you're also in service of the design in a big way for me. And if you're not, I think the game is worse off for it. You have to design art and design animations that both assist and are complementary to the design of the game. If your animation is slow, but it's supposed to be like a fast, twitchy part of the game, your animation's bad. I think it's bad for the game. And
that makes sense.
Players will feel it. So if you can do like a snappy animation that feels and looks the same, but makes the gameplay easier, that's really good. With Eichenfeld, because it does have a timed hit system, that's a huge part of that. Enemies have to be enemies and be a character and have personality, but they also have to make sense what they're doing, and the player has to know like when to block them and do all that. So they have to have a lot of conveyance. They have to have a lot of like, I use a lot of animation principles to like let you know that things are going to happen and to let you understand the impact of certain movements, all that kind of stuff. It's really complicated. And it's a lot
of, so like squash, it's a, and all that kind of thing.
Squash, stretch, but also like, I can't remember what the term is, but like you signal that you're going to do something before you do it. So like you'll do a hand flourish and then someone will grab something out of their pocket, right? So you see the hand flourish. So you look over, then you see them draw something out of their pocket. If you just cut straight to them drawing something out of their pocket, the player could miss it entirely and not be prepared for it.
So and then it feels unfair.
Yeah, and then it feels unfair, or you just feel bad because you weren't paying attention or whatever. But also then your player actually sees animation, which is cool too. But that all plays with game design. It's not a separate thing. So producers and role is different. And it can actually be different for different projects because the scale and like what kind of marketing the game is expecting and what size of the team requires like massively different like roles as a producer. With smaller teams and less like early on, producers will do a lot more just like chatting with the team and like working with them and managing all the Slack stuff and all the email threads, making sure they know when people are going to be leaving and how long they're going to be leaving for, emailing people if they haven't contacted them in a while. This is all stuff that okay. you can spend a kind of ridiculous amount of time doing, but also making sure that people aren't getting like overwhelmed and that they're like, well, but, and then the bigger part of that is, especially when it comes to later on, producer's role gets like really important. And if you have publishers or funding from certain avenues or things like that, that's where the producer becomes super important. If you're in the middle of programming and doing all the art for a game like I am, and suddenly you're like, you have to have emails with publishers and constant stuff, and you have to fill out tax forms and do all your business and like all this stuff, that's so overwhelming.
That's such a drain.
It's just emailing people and having to like have the competence to send good emails and seal deals is so much work and stress that it makes doing the rest of those things really hard. And producers are godsend when they're able to do that well. And they also play a big role in conferences, especially with indies, I've noticed. They always are present at conferences. Quite often, they're the ones representing the game,
okay.
which is kind of not necessarily a producer's role. This is sort of, you get a mix of these producers and what do you call them? They handle like the marketing, and they're the kind of like, they're the front face of the game. I don't know, the term is escaping.
I can't remember the name.
PR kind of. Like your
yeah, I just kind of want to say front man.
the hype man.
Yeah, so they're the PR for your game, and I've seen people actually do both those roles. I think there is a little bit of overlap, but I at this point I have to kind of stop because this isn't my role. But if you talk to someone who does either or both of those roles, I'm sure they can give you a lot more insight into like. I'm sure I even have underplayed it. There's probably a lot more that they do as well. So if you're a producer and you're watching this and cringing, I apologize.
Hey, Wolf. If you're a producer and that wasn't a full explanation, give us a chat and we'd love to talk to you.
Yeah, but they do
shameless
a lot.
Plug.
Yeah, they do a lot of work. And yeah, it's the kind of work that you underestimate, especially when release time comes up.
Yeah, I feel like that's always, there's so much live and die by that sort of thing. It's sort of you've made your game and that's terrific, but now we have to get it out there. And I feel like that's something that people might overlook or something like that.
You need to get it out there after spending a year and a half working on it nonstop, and all you want so bad is a vacation. Now you have to double down and work even harder.
Oh, that's when the fun just completely comes to a grinding halt.
Unless you're making like cool, weird alt games or something, then you're just like, put it on itch, post it on Twitter, start working on the next thing.
Do you have you seen any kind of like alt games that you've been a fan of, or have you had any interaction with that scene or anything?
Robert Yang's games are some of my favorites right now, like Stick Shift and Hurt Me Plenty. I absolutely love them. I think they're super cool.
So we have not talked about those games on this show. I've learned about them from I believe Laura K. Buzz and her work, but I think this would be a great time to talk about what those games are.
Yeah.
And this is, I guess, technically not an all ages show, so we're allowed to swear or be explicit. I heard Robert Yang's work kind of gets a little bit interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So if you'd like to explain what those games are, if you're fine with that, that'd be great.
Yeah. Robert Yang makes games about gay sex and sometimes they're intimate, sometimes they're silly and raunchy, and sometimes they go a little bit deeper. They usually go a little bit deeper. Yeah, and they're usually quite small. They're not long hour adventures. They usually take place in one room or one place, like inside a car or inside a bar or inside the bathroom. and they really kind of like really narrow in on experiences. They're gay sex games, or just sex games. In Stick Shift, you have to have sex with your car. You masturbate it, while driving. It's a very intimate experience with you and your car. You have to play it to really just play it. It's something. Hurt Me Plenty is sort of like a BDSM game about spanking. And it's great. And it has some other cool things I don't really want to spoil. I would think people should try it out and just, see what it likes. Spanking's pretty fun. But it's also it can also be an intimate experience, and Robert explores both ends of that, the wild and the fun, and also the intimate side of it.
Excellent. So I haven't played it, but I think I know what you're alluding to as far as spoiling the hook of it. So yeah, I definitely recommend you go play that because it does some interesting things with, I believe, consent, which is an under-discussed topic in video games for sure.
Yeah, and if you have like a big long game, consent's a little bit trickier thing to like explore. And there's some things you can only really explore in smaller games, and so I always appreciate people that do that. What I really like about his work is he's one of the few indies, like very, very few indies, who are experimenting with like realism. AAA games are realistic all the time. Dark Souls is kind of realistic, like it looks realistic and compelling, even though it's fantasy. Yeah. Call of Duty, sure. Even Halo, like these games, they look and feel real. The worlds feel real. The leaves fall and the rain bounces off your helmet. They're really intense. And
can see the hairs in Geralt's beard in The Witcher grow each follicle at a time.
Yeah, and some of them are like intense war shooting games, and others are like survival games, and some of them are really intimate, like experiences, like the Walking Dead game and stuff like that, where they're like dramas, basically, is what I would call them. They're a drama that you kind of play with choices. But Robert Yang games they're more indie. They're way more singular. They're about like one idea. Let's pick one idea of being in a urinal and what it's like to be in a urinal and build some sort of gameplay mechanic around that. That's kind of weird and a little bit funny, and then make it as realistic as possible. And he spent like two days modeling a urinal, and he was like working on the shaders. He experimented with shaders a lot to try to achieve really good. Nobody would work that hard in a urinal, because in a video game you're going to kick open the urinal. There's not going to be a guy there or no ammo packs, and you're going to leave. You're not going to sit there and stare at the urinal. But in a game about using urinals, you're just going to sit there and stare at urinals. So the urinals have to be a lot better. And you find out that there's like, so he's probably got shaders called like urinal.glsl, like, you know, it's like, this is the shader for only urinals. So it's stuff like that. It's really cool. He also experiments a lot deeper with like things like, how do people gather in certain places? If your game, if you only like run through a bar and try to murder everybody, or there's just like, you're trying to find a dead body, or you're investigating a dead body because it's a crime game, like that's one thing, and there's usually not people there, and everybody has like a gameplay role there. But in a game about mingling in a bar, suddenly mingling is like this aspect of realism you never see explored that much. How do people mingle? Where do they stand in a bar? Where do they go? How do they move around each other? And this all becomes important because the gameplay mechanic is centralized around that. And in bigger games, that's not really a big deal. And I'm not saying it should be in bigger games, because in bigger games it doesn't matter. You can't put all this focus into something that's not going to really make your game better. So, but I like that games like his and game developers like him get to experiment with that stuff, and nobody else is, and it's really cool. But I like just seeing indie doing really realistic stuff. There aren't very many, because I think it's hard, but I like that he's putting in the work to do it, and it'd be cool to see if there were more further on.
Yeah, that's a fascinating concept. I never even thought of the idea of subtle realism things that you see in real life. Like, yes, the water droplets in this video game on the PS4 are so perfect, you think it's real life, but the people don't gather in a bar the way that you would expect it to happen.
Yeah.
And to be able to model something like that is not just a marvel in video games, I feel like. That's something that has greater social implications if you can figure that out.
Yeah,
kind of sounds like Robert Yang is the Chuck Tingle of video games, which is not a bad thing at all.
Maybe, I don't know. I don't know how really deep and sensitive Chuck Tingle's work goes, because Robert sometimes does.
I think it's more of I don't know either. I guess the metaphor I'm trying to make is something that's not on the beaten path, but appeals to a lot of people for a similar kind of reason.
Yeah. I think there are people who don't play video games very much who could probably find something they like about his work too. I appreciate that. Like, you could probably give... Yeah, there's probably a few friends I have that are like, I don't play video games that much, but I could give them one of Robert Yang's games and they'd be like, ah, this is great.
Games have that unique ability to give an experience which is... I wouldn't say it's better or worse than movies or books or anything, but it's definitely different. And... you know, it sounds like his games really, really utilize the idea that this is a unique medium. Let's use it for what it can be.
Mm-hmm.
That's beautiful. So you mentioned that his games are kind of, you initially started by saying that they're gay sex games. And I think that's something that might appeal to the queer community, and we can edit this out if you're not cool with it, but does that have any resonance with your work or anything? Or?
A quick moment. It's not just me. I've literally heard him describe his own games to strangers as gay sex games. So yeah, that's,
oh, nice.
Yeah. So I didn't just like make that up. That's his calling. Yeah.
Perfect.
Or at least his current elevator pitch. It may change. He may get tired of making gay sex games and start doing something weirder, different.
Okay, fair enough.
But carry on.
My question was, does that have any resonance with you or your work or anything like that?
A little bit. I just like that he's exploring sexuality and personal topics and isn't afraid to. And I also like that he's not trying to have a wider spread appeal. One thing I've learned that I really want to do with my games is like to have a really strong niche appeal, and there are infinite niches.
Right.
I think it was, what's his name from Capybara Games? He said he has like this infinite niche theory where it's like, they're just infinite niches more or less. And game designers can actually profit and find solace in a lot of those niches and create for them and be successful. And so I've been trying to find my niche, and seeing that Robert has found a niche and that his games are kind of popular and fun. He has a lot of struggles, like he can't get his games on Steam and things like that. So that's kind of the downside, is if you're too, you know, experimental or you're making gay sex games, then people really shy away.
Right.
But the people who don't shy away sometimes are the people who need your games the most. So I'm hoping
Absolutely.
Some people will find my game and be like, finally, someone made the game I want. Like nobody makes the game I want, but you did. Thank you. Like that's kind of what I'm hoping to achieve, or what I'd like to. Like have a subset of people that just really like it, and I can just like give them something that nobody else can give them.
Awesome. Hey, well, you sound very committed to it. And like I said, I backed it. And from what you've made so far and what I've seen, it seems like something right up my alley. There's not a lot of turn-based strategies that I've seen that really have grabbed my interest since Advance Wars and Mega Man Battle Network. And hearing you pull those as references is so reassuring to me. So hopefully I'll be one of those people that you're looking for in your fandom. Again, not to make this too much of like a gush fest.
That's okay.
Totally unprofessional.
Yeah.
But Chevy, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling pretty good. Like obviously the last few days have been rough with all the election stuff. And I know a lot of people are really bummed. I'm also pretty bummed, like deep down, like my heart is fluttering and all that. And it hurts seeing like so many of the people I know in like kind of a lot of pain right now. But I'm kind of been train myself to just keep working even when I feel this way, and so I have been, and so I'm part of me is just still happy that I'm still working hard and still trying to achieve what I need to achieve, because I can't let this stuff stop me. So yeah, so I'm actually
totally
am feeling good, especially like on the surface, and like I'm not in like pain or anything like that. I've had a rough last few years, and like things right now for me are so much better than they were years ago that it's like no matter what bad things happen right now, I feel like they can't be worse than they were. So yeah, even when bad things happen now, I'm like, nice try. You can't take me down. Let's go. Make the hell out of this RPG. You can't stop me. So yeah.
Yeah, that's the,
so I'm feeling
that's
good.
That's the awesome optimism that I love to hear.
Also, like the more I write, the more story I get done in this game, the better I start to feel about it. And that's a really good feeling. I feel like I'm building up some steam and getting like a lot of good, like circular feedback where I'm like, Oh man, like I had ideas and then they get better and then the story's just starting to be like really compelling and exciting to me, and I really hope that it will be to other people. So yeah, I'm starting to feel good about the game, and I'm glad I'm not just getting tired of it. I'm like getting more excited the more I work on it, because I feel like that'll help carry me to the finish line.
That's definitely a refreshing thing to hear. It's this episode is probably going to come out a couple weeks from now, so it's going to kind of be talking into the past, but for the people who are listening, you're going to hear, like you said, the election stuff is very, it's rough. You know, I just kind of was in my bed this morning, getting up, and just, this is draining, but I'm looking through statuses, and I saw our one friend who was on here before, and he was basically like, you know what, guys, suit up and go. And I said, you know what, I'm gonna put on my shirt, get my shower, ready to go. I put on a suit today. I didn't have any meetings. I didn't need to wear a suit. Corporate America can't hold me, but I put on my tie and my suit and said, let's go. And I listened to Hamilton, and once that first chorus kicked in, and when Lin-Manuel finally says, Alexander Hamilton, I said, you know what? Y'all aren't holding me back. This is going to be a great day. I'm going to kill it. I'm doing a podcast tonight. I'm going to call Steph. I'm going to call Chevy. It's going to be great. And, you know, the work is helping.
And then you got to the end and you were crying and you're like, what have I done?
Well, jokes on everybody but me. I've been trying to make myself stage cry. And when something is sad, but you're trying to make yourself cry on cue, you will find it impossible to cry.
Oh, man.
I've been trying to for months to try to cry on It's Quiet Uptown on cue. I can't do it. I'm so sad.
Yeah, that seems crazy hard.
Are you a fan of the Hamilton musical?
Me? I love it. I think it's fantastic. I used to listen to it while I work a lot. One thing, this makes a few other people jealous, is I can actually listen to podcasts and musicals and lyrics and stories and things like that while I work, while I like code and write. It, for some reason, my brain segments and I can listen to it and comprehend it while I'm working on stuff. And so, yeah, Hamilton is great because I just got to like listen to this like epic drama while working on my game. And so it was really good for that.
Can I give you applause real quick?
Yeah. Of course you can.
Yeah. For me too, because that's like a struggle for me. I always like I'll put on a podcast or something and I'll get distracted. I'll start to work on something else and then I'll look back and think, I have no idea what they were saying for the last 10 minutes. I have to like slide back.
Yeah, I think that's the normal response. And this isn't like me bragging. I didn't earn this skill. This is just like a thing I'm just lucky to have. And I found out that my older brother actually can do the same thing. He's like, yeah, I can do that. So I'm like, oh man, we see some weird genetic thing with our brains or something. Like, I don't know. But yeah,
also, I need to hang out with you guys then.
But also I think just like working on games forever, so many of the things I do are like muscle memory. So if I have to work on something new and really hard, sometimes I do have to be like, oh, okay, I need to turn everything off, even music, and just like really focus. But right now I can feel a lot of it is just like working on things that I already know what they're supposed to be. I just have to like do the work. So it's a little bit monotonous, but I'm still enjoying it because like every time I finish something, it feels super good because I'm just creating content constantly. So it's pretty easy to listen to stuff like Hamilton, and I listen to my Bim Bam and like Two Dope Queens a lot and stuff like that. And it's always really great. It keeps me working hard.
What's that one?
Two Dope Queens is Jessica Simpson and Phoebe Robinson. And they have I don't remember what network it's on, but you can look up Two Dope Queens. And it's about like stand-up comedy. So they just kind of, it's scripted and they kind of like ramble a bit. And then they'll have like a stand-up comedian. There's a lot of like people of color and a lot of women comedians and a lot of weird kind of avant-garde comedians as well sometimes. So it's kind of fun. It's hit or miss. Some of the humor kind of, you know, but they play off each other really well and they're not afraid to get into like raunchy subject matter. So I really enjoy it. The humor is pretty fantastic most of the time.
And this is the Jessica from the Daily Show, right?
That's that Jessica Simpson. Yeah.
Nice.
Cool. Do you have any, favorite comedians?
I said Jessica Simpson. It's not Jessica Simpson. That's the singer, isn't it?
Yeah. I was pretty sure I know what he's talking about, but
it's
Williams.
Sorry, Jessica Williams. Sorry. Oh my goodness, I'm awful. That's okay. I was like, those are not even the same people at all. You guys didn't even notice.
That would be a much different. Podcast.
Yeah.
Let's start it here. We need Jessica Simpson and Jessica Williams on the same podcast because
I don't know anything about Jessica Williams. I don't know why I said that. It's just a brain.
Hey, we all have the days. Do you have any favorite comedians? Because that's a hole I can go down for a while.
Maria Bamford is my favorite comedian right now.
She's so good.
Yeah. I've seen her live twice. She's fantastic.
Ooh, I'm jealous.
Yeah.
I was upset because she was supposed to be at one of the Oddball comedy tours that I was at, and she wasn't there. So I was kind of sad.
Mm.
But I've been real big on Hannibal Buress lately.
Nice. Yeah, I like stand-up comedy a lot. It's similar to like podcasts and things. I can listen to it while I work, so it's really fun. I also like John Mulaney a lot. I think he's hilarious and weird, and like I like how effeminate he is, and like his comedy, his build-ups are so good that I had like pause sometimes while watching them because I am actually like doubled over. They make me laugh so hard. I think his second stand-up bit was even better than his first, and his first was really good, so I like that a lot.
I need to go back and watch it again. I've seen New in Town so many times that the Law and Order with Ice-T bit. Oh,
so good. Yeah, he has.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
He had the special about What's New Pussycat
in the diner. Like, That's so funny.
Slayed me so bad the first time I heard that bit. I couldn't even control myself.
Cool. And just one quick passing question, and it's kind of a two-part, but take it however you want to go. Like I said, it's casual. It's always nice to have people that are from outside the United States, so Canada and Europe we've had so far, London specifically. I guess, A, how did you like Hamilton as someone not from the United States? And B, does your development of games have any effect on being sort of outside the United States?
Cool. Good questions. Actually, these are fun. I like questions I can answer.
I think they're the best kind.
Hamilton is amazing. I'm pretty sure a lot of my Canadian friends love it more than any American friends I have. Because to us,
really?
we weren't spoiled. You guys were all spoiled. You know how it ended. You knew all the characters and like what their roles were, or at least a lot of them. We didn't know anything.
You overestimate the U.S. education system.
Okay. It might just be I'm friends with a lot of... Sorry, what?
We all knew who was going to die at the end, but that's about pretty much anything anyone knew about Hamilton.
Okay, yeah. In my circles, a lot of my friends are kind of history buffs, and a few of them are Americans. So the Americans that I know more closely knew a lot more about it. So I'm probably a little bit like biased on that side. But yeah, it was awesome. It was just like, I didn't know any of this stuff, and it made it probably 10 times more exciting than it actually was in reality. But yeah, I think it was fantastic. It was cool. Just getting a little bit of history in that sort of format. It was brand new. It was totally fresh. So
that's my preferred method of learning history. if they can make all history through Broadway/hip-hop show tunes, I am fine with that.
Yeah, and it's not the same as like a movie, like a historical movie. Like I do like historical movies and historical fiction a lot. I watch movies more than I read historical books. But it's way different than a movie. I don't know why, but it's just like it's vastly different. The length means you get to like dive into people's heads a lot more too. And just the way the story's told is obviously hugely different because theater's an entirely different beast. I do like biographies and autobiographies a lot as well. I've spent a lot of time reading those. So.
Okay, cool. And, as far as marketing, on your development side, have you noticed any difference between the Americas or is it pretty much the same?
What do you mean the America? Oh, like marketing to Americans?
Yeah, so I've seen some people say from Canada, Mexico, London, that sometimes their tastes, like their tastes and their preferences align almost perfectly, but sometimes there's a little bit of small differences. Have you seen any of that or is it pretty much the same?
No, like if you were just to give me a person, I wouldn't be able to tell if they're Canadian, American, or unless they had like some heavy accent. So based on their tastes and stuff, it's really hard for me to tell. I don't feel like there's that much of a difference.
Okay, it's always just something out of my personal curiosity. There's no expectation there. I've just seen from on the other side, on the European side, every now and then there will be a small preference difference where they'll say, "Well, I can't believe Americans are sensitive about that, but they allow this." So I didn't know if.
Yeah, I think Canada and the States, for obvious reasons, are a lot more similar than any European country in the States. So
for sure,
yeah.
My only experience up there, I was in Toronto for a conference once, and everyone was like, "Hey, this is like Times Square, but here." And I didn't know how serious that was until I went to actual Times Square, and I was like, "This is the exact same thing. This is hilarious." So
yeah, I had that weird.
Anytime I get the chance, I just want to ask.
Yeah, I had that weird feeling when I went to Melbourne. We visited Melbourne for like a week or 2 weeks. I think it was about a week, and I was just like, "Whoa, this is like Vancouver." It's like all glass buildings, and it was rainy. And I went to the bar. I went and posted on Twitter. I was like, "Hey, all Melbourne friends, meet me at this bar." And we met up with a bunch of them. And there was like four other white guys who look exactly like me. And I was like, "Oh, I'm in Bizarro World. What the heck?" And you all have Australian accents. We got a picture of like four of us together, and we all look the exact same. Like even to me, we look the exact same. I'm like, man, Yeah, so it was really weird. I was like, man, this is like so similar. Obviously, it's a lot bigger than Vancouver. Vancouver's pretty small, but it felt so similar. Even the weather was similar. Yeah.
Cool. So, listeners, you may have heard a small drop. It's no worry. We're totes professionals. Besides that car going by, we're totes professionals. And we are back. So, Chevy, do you remember the point we were on? Because we were just kind of rambling while you were gone.
We talked about Hamilton. We talked about stand-up comedians. Oh, no, I don't remember.
Well, you know what? It's all fine and good. Mm-hmm. Listeners, we'll have our show notes and our contact information. So if we kind of left on a hanging edge, feel free to at me and ask us what our maybe responses were to this, and we'll be sure to let you know because we love you. But this seems like a perfect opportunity to go into our final segment. Are you up for sort of a rapid-fire questions sort of area, Chevy?
Let's go.
Okay, cool. So would you consider yourself part of the nerdy space or not?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Because we have some questions, and Steph is probably queuing them up right now because we have a tradition. And
sorry, I thought that was like rapid fire. I was like, getting ready to like for them to keep coming. I was like, yes. And then you started talking. I was like, come on.
I love to hear the sound of my own voice, and not when I'm editing, but just right now. And so basically, we want to ask people nerdy questions to quote-unquote test their nerdiness, but not in a gatekeepy sort of way, so there's no wrong answers. It's just sort of, let's stretch the nerd muscle. So
this will be great. I'm terrible at this. Let's go.
Oh, yeah. So when we say rapid fire, be as rapid as you want to, but if you want to ramble, it's a great place for it. So Steph, per the tradition, you want to kick this game off.
I absolutely will. So since presumably as a Carry On fan, you're also a Harry Potter fan. I'm going to go out on a limb. So what would you say your Hogwarts house is?
Oh, it's Ravenclaw, easily.
Nice.
I'm happy to see another. I'm happy to see another Ravenclaw. Okay, no worries. Let's keep it moving. What's your favorite iteration of Batman's Joker, if you have one?
I don't have one.
Okay. Do you have a least favorite, or do you just not know the character?
I don't know the character very well. I only know him from like the Batman cartoon in the 90s. So that one's my favorite and my least favorite because it's the only one I know.
Hey, that counts. Steph, it's your turn.
Oh, nice. All right. What if you could cross over any two fandoms, what two things would you cross over?
Holy moly, that was a crazy question.
What's our favorite one?
Let's go. Oh, jeez. I don't know too much about fandoms.
This one always catches people off guard. But any movie, any game, any comic, anything that you... Two things that you would like to see, like Harry Potter fighting Jedi or whatever.
Yeah, like I've seen Sonic and Mega Man crossed over twice, and that's enough for me, and I'm happy, and I love it.
Yeah, I think fighting game community and Star Wars would be amazing. I would love to see a Star Wars fighting game.
Ooh, that's interesting.
That would be fantastic.
There's such a huge cast of Star Wars characters, so there could be some really cool stuff going on. Anyway, yeah, sure that.
Okay, are you a fan of fighting games in general then? Here's a follow-up, yes. It's less rapid.
I love fighting games.
Do you have a favorite game? Or anything?
My favorite is, because I'm actually good at it, is Super Smash Bros.
Nice.
And my second favorite is definitely the Street Fighter Street Fighter 4, and the new one I like a lot too, but I don't know as much about it. I'm not that good at Street Fighter. I just love watching it.
It's so hype. I'm a fan of Smash Bros. And Skullgirls. I really hate how cheesecakey Skullgirls is because I really love the mechanics and the lore. But what's your favorite Smash Bros.?
I like the new one a lot. The new one,
it's my favorite.
Melee is a close second. The new one is so fun and so good.
I love it. Awesome. That's not the rapid-fire question, but I was just a little curious, one fan to another. Okay, let's get a little bit awkward here and apologize to the fans. How do you pronounce it, GIF or JIF?
GIF.
Bang, bang. Your turn, Steph.
Rude. All right, are you a cat person or a dog person?
Dog person. Oh, I'm allergic to cats.
Oh, that'll do it.
Yeah. Fair enough. I also like dogs better, don't get me wrong, but I'm just allergic to cats.
Ooh, woof woof, take that, cat people.
Side note.
Have you seen Pacific Rim by chance?
Yes, I have.
Okay, so that's not the question, but here is the question, and I don't think I skipped. If you could pick any character in fiction or, like, celebrities, who would you be drift compatible with?
Who would I be drift compatible with? Are we talking, like, TV?
Anything you want.
Okay. Probably Star Butterfly.
From
Star vs. the Forces of Evil.
Oh, I no.
You know, I've heard of that, and I still haven't watched it. I've heard so many good things.
she's just like whack ass, hyper, super energetic, always raring to go, kind of gets into trouble a lot, likes to take risks, is, you know, flight of fancy, all that kind of stuff. We would just sync up. We're on the same wavelength.
Nice. Okay. Good person to fight a kaiju with.
See, that's one of those characters that I'm so upset that I didn't know her name right away, because I keep seeing that, and anyone who knows me knows that show is 100% my art style.
It
seems
to
be my humor. I love Steven Universe, Scott Pilgrim, cartoons with thick lines, you know, all that kind of stuff. So
yeah, that
show is, I just haven't got there yet. So
yeah.
Are you a fan of Steven Universe too, since that's kind of one of our show's favorites?
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear based on, like, that's a huge inspiration for my game. I like Steven Universe a lot. It's a great show. I'm always keeping up with it and rewatch it a few times.
Okay. And before we kick it to Steph's next question, do you have a favorite gem?
Oh, it's a tough one. I'd say it's probably Pearl.
She's pretty cool. Okay.
Nice.
Steph, I haven't asked you. Do you have a favorite gem?
Oh, that's a hard question.
That's why I'm surprised we've never talked about it.
Garnet, I guess.
Mm. Garnet's pretty dope. Fair enough. Cool, cool. And that's your turn.
Oh, gosh.
I'm not even going to answer. It's Garnet.
Do you have something that you typically do when you're feeling sad to cheer up? Like a favorite book, favorite game, favorite animal to pet?
For me, hanging out and socializing is great. Just, you know, chilling with friends. I have a lot of friends to hang out with. Nature documentaries are amazing and never fail.
They've been on fire this week too.
I'll watch cartoons and anime will also cheer me up usually.
Cool. Do you have a favorite anime?
Or
like a handful of series recommendations or anything like that? People always ask me for like what anime should I watch first, and it's like, wow, that's an impossible question.
I like Michiko to Hatchin a lot. It's pretty good.
Okay. Do you have, like, a genre of anime for, like...
I love when stuff's really animated. Like, I like... For me, it's like... I ignore a lot of the plot of the stuff I watch, so I can't even remember it that well. I love watching how they animate and how they express themselves and how they... how it's all done. But, I can't do that. I don't know. I'm sure there are some, but I'm drawing a blank right now. Haven't watched anime in a long time. Planet Earth 2 came out, so I've been like tunnel vision on nature documentaries at the moment.
No worries.
Nice. Let's ask a dumb question. This isn't this is a follow-up to Steph's. Sailor Moon or Dragon Ball Z?
Sailor Moon.
Yeah, you picked the right choice. I prefer Dragon Ball Z, but you picked the right choice.
I really like, I don't know how Dragon Ball Z fans are going to feel about this, but I really like Dragon Ball, the manga, a lot. Z, it kind of derived from my taste a lot, but just the original Dragon Ball, when he's like a little whack kid, and it was so weird, and I really like that a lot, that series. I don't know why, and I love the way it's drawn, so I never watched the cartoon. I'm assuming there was a cartoon of just Dragon Ball?
Yeah.
Okay, I never watched it. I don't even know about it. But I like the manga a lot.
Okay. Well, somebody who was my defining moment of hardcore, probably toxic masculinity brodom was when Goku went Super Saiyan the first time. And I was like, I don't know what gender I'm interested in. I don't know what my life goal is, but I want to be that right there. Like, that's the face up for me. And people like me would still say, Dragon Ball the manga, even though I haven't read it, I'm like, that was probably a better story, because Dragon Ball Z didn't have a good story, let's be honest.
Yeah, Dragon Ball had its problems. Parts of you was like, I'm just going to pretend I didn't read that, because that was pretty an off-color joke. Stuff like that. So it's like, you know.
It's put a little box on it like Looney Tunes has, like, hey, guys, this was the 80s, I'm not condoning it, but it was a different time. I'm not saying it's okay. I've grown.
I did like it a lot still.
Nice, yeah. It seems...
Keep them coming, I'm liking this.
Yeah, the good stuff was good. Akira Toriyama made the art for Chrono Trigger, and that shocked me, even though it's, of course, exactly the same.
Yeah, Chrono Trigger is another inspiration for my game.
I have yet to play it. I have it for DS, and I have not got past the little bazaar at the very, 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 like, first 5 minutes.
Okay.
It's time. okay, so next rapid-fire question. Who would you want to play you in a show or movie? So they're making a Marvel TV show or a Showtime show about you. Who's playing you? And it doesn't have to be accurate because our we have a friend who's a large black man, and I think he said like Michael Cera or something. So
I'm thinking. I understand that I get to answer how I want. I'm just thinking. Give me a chance. It'd be probably Christian Schell.
Nice.
Kristen Schaal's awesome.
Excellent choice.
Do you have a favorite Kristen Schaal role?
I love her in Gravity Falls, and I love her in Flight of the Conchords.
Nice.
And her stand-up comedy is pretty awesome, too. It's so missed.
Oh, man. I saw her one special where she, like, just walked off at the end. That messed me up for, like, 2 days, how, like, bizarre it was, and I was so happy.
Yeah, she's also, like, a little bit avant-garde at times. It's kind of cool.
Oh, it's so good, especially when, like, audiences don't know how to get it, and you're part of that audience who's not avant-garde yet, but you're like, I liked what I saw, but I don't get it.
All right, rapid fire, let's go. Yes. I'm into this.
Yeah, okay.
All right, hey, it's my turn. Do you have a favorite candy?
I like boring candies that don't have any sugar and just taste like gummy nothing. So any of those. They're like the whale ones that nobody wants to eat, and I like black jelly beans. Yeah, so when you have three siblings, all the good candy gets eaten. You learn to like bad candy really fast because nobody eats it. And you're like, I'm going to learn to like this, and I'm going to eat it. So, also, I have my teeth are always in pain, so I don't like really sugary stuff because it hurts my teeth. So like, if I get to eat candy, I like the crappy stuff. I do like sour stuff a lot, but it makes me like salivate so much that I can't breathe. So I like it, but it's like a love-hate relationship. It doesn't love me back.
That's the love. That's rough. Okay. Favorite Starburst?
They all taste the same. I would say probably, yeah. I don't even know what flavor Starburst are. I haven't had a Starburst in like 15 years. I actually have no idea.
Yeah,
sorry.
You're probably making a good choice.
Let's say orange. Is that a color?
It is a color.
That's right, a color and a flavor.
I like citrus candy a lot, so we'll say the orange Starburst is probably my favorite.
Fair enough. Steph, kick it.
All right. Marvel or DC?
Marvel?
Okay.
That's fair. You're in good company.
I don't know a lot about DC, so I have to say Marvel.
Nice. Okay, let's invert it. What character would you like to play in a movie or a show?
What character would I... Does it have to be Marvel or just any movie or show?
No, whatever.
Any character who's ever existed or historical figure.
Oh, okay.
Just an error.
Oh, I'm such a terrible actor. Okay, this will be interesting. Who would I like to play? It's something I haven't thought about. I like this question. It would definitely be a historical figure. I think it would be fun to play like someone like weird and nerdy in like an important like historical thing, like. Like if there was an adaptation of like Turing's Cathedral or something like that, I would like to play like John von Neumann or one of those crazy old like physicist guys like that were in like Princeton in the 40s, and they're all like all proper and they like kind of odd, and but they're also a little bit kind of like wild and smoked and drank a lot, but then they'd come up with crazy theories. Yeah, so maybe like Gödel or von Neumann or someone like that. That'd be really fun because I could probably get into that role, be real real nerdy.
Nice. I like it. Let's run through them all, Steph. We have a few more. We can get through this.
All right, if you could have any superpower for a week, what superpower would you have?
Flying.
It's an easy one.
Okay, so we still have a few. I think we still have a couple funny ones left, so let's get into the kind of junky stuff. Do you have a favorite crying moment from a piece of media?
Like a time that something made you cry.
And saying Fry's dog from Futurama, I think, is cheating, so we'll push a little harder than that.
Okay. So, spoilers, return in 30 seconds if you haven't seen Up. Okay, so in Up, it's not the beginning part. The beginning part's harsh, but it's the part where in the end, where he sits on the chair after he's given up and he opens the book to find out that he has never turned the page past the sad page at the end that he thought was the end of the book. And he found out that she just like filled out the rest of the book for him. That part every time just annihilates me. It is so heartbreaking, but also so heartwarming. And I think it's a really positive message. All right. Spoilers okay, end.
Let's get out of there. Let's jump out of there quick.
All right. Easy one.
Oh darn! I thought of a better one.
Go ahead.
I got to do my better one. Refresh. So that's actually second. More spoilers this time for Avatar: The Last Airbender. When Zuko is reunited with his uncle, that moment annihilates me every time. Because he had disappointed his uncle again, over and over again. He'd failed to like really live up to like his uncle's expectations and wishes. His uncle wanted to be good so bad, and he never could be. And he failed him over and over and over again. So he left, and he abandoned his uncle. And on a journey on his own, he finally like discovered like what his like role in the world was. And then he just like came back, and he had to reunite with his uncle to like achieve his goal. And he was so scared, he was so nervous, and he was like shaking. And he's just like, hi, uncle. And his uncle, without even like hesitation, just runs up and hugs him. That part, the fact that just like without hesitation, after all the harm his nephew had done to him, then he just like ran up and did that. It was like melted me every time. I'm like, ah. Yeah, so
Iroh's
that part's
like such
scary.
A good character.
Iroh's amazing.
Well, let's slow down the rapid fire for just a second. Since you got into your feels a little bit, I feel like we only owe you to tell us our feels real quick. Steph, do you have a specific moment that you always go to?
Yeah, I'd love to hear.
Oh, gosh. Like, low-hanging fruit, but, like, in, I can last all the way through the end of Hamilton until when they say, forgiveness. In his quiet uptown, when, like, the chorus chimes in, like, right after Eliza's taken his hand again, he goes, forgiveness. Like, my entire body gets chills, and...
Oh, man.
Just, like...
Nice.
Well, side note, we should definitely reenact that next time we cosplay the Hamiltons, because I would love to see that many people's hearts melt, and I think our costumes are awesome. My heart melt moment is at the end of Undertale. Chevy, have you played Undertale?
I haven't played it. I've watched a Let's Play, though, so I know how it
okay.
ends.
Okay. Yeah, so spoilers, but for a year-old game, is the moment when after you beat the pacifist run, and you're feeling so amazing, you beat Azrael, and he's like, I don't want to be a flower, and it just says, comfort him, do not. And you comfort him, and the music drops, and he just walks over and hugs you, and his head drops, and I'm like, oh, damn it, man, this is the most bittersweet thing ever. That's my crying moment. It's
nice.
So beautiful. Okay, Steph. Get us out of this pit.
All right. Bouncing off of the content of your answer, if you were a bender, what kind of bender would you be or would you like to be?
Earthbender.
Airbender right here.
Ha, huh, man, yeah. Waterbender.
So we got a whole team.
We just need a firebender.
Yeah. I'm so, like, heavy of step and, like, loud and obnoxious. I'd just be the best earthbender.
Nice.
Okay. Next question. We're getting down to the wire. What would your crappy X-Men mutation be? So something that would consider you a mutant, but you wouldn't get on the X-Men, i.e. Family Guy make your her nails out very long. Steph always would be called Bethany instead of Stephanie.
I really didn't understand that question.
Okay.
I went through it really fast. My apologies.
I'll take it. So if you had an X-Men mutation that... you counted as a mutant, but it wasn't power to be like super proud of. Like
it's
something
a crappy
that actually,
mutation.
Yeah, like something that would it isn't something that would get you on the X-Men. It's just like for a while I worked retail for 2 years, and for some reason every time I answered the phone and said Barnes & Noble, how can I help you? Like Stephanie speaking, they would say, "Hi, Bethany." It's like, am I speaking in a different language? Like my crappy mutation was being called like confused for someone named Bethany.
Oh, okay.
Sorry,
mine
I
would
was
be,
kind of slurring my speech.
Mine would be like my presence would always give people deja vu.
Ooh.
Ooh, that's
so they would just be like, huh, that'd be it.
That's probably one of the funniest answers I've heard in our whole, 20-some episodes of this. That's amazing.
Huh. Okay.
Huh. How about that?
Wouldn't be harmful. You could not use it for good or evil. It'd just be like, this moment. Yeah. That's it. That's all I could do.
Oh, man. Well, I think so I guess we have two right now. I don't know if it's two, but whatever. What's your favorite book, movie, game, etc.? And you can answer all three or just one of them.
Book right now is Carry On.
Okay.
Movie is probably Alien.
Okay.
What was the other things?
Game slash etc.
Okay, cool. Game would be probably Chrono Trigger. This changes a lot, but right now I'm feeling the Chrono Trigger vibe.
Okay.
Music would be right now it's what's it called?
I'm not sure. I wish I could help.
Oh, sorry. Right now it's Glass Animals.
Okay.
And what else can I come up with? I think it's a comic book. Like a graphic novel or a comic book would be, I really like Anya's Ghost a lot.
Okay.
Meaning
to read that.
Yeah. Vera Brazgul, and it's very good. I don't know if it's my favorite. It's definitely top because it's one of the first I thought of. So we'll say that for now.
Cool.
Okay.
There's a lot of really good ones. Yeah,
you extended that a little bit. Steph, you want to hit with your favorite book, movie, game, music, and comic book?
Oh, that's rough.
Well, I'll go for
you
first. Right now because I'm on. Okay, so The Great Gatsby. That's my favorite book for a lot of reasons. My favorite movie probably has to be Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, without a doubt. Favorite game of all time, Sonic 3 with the Knuckles lock on. Right now it's Overwatch. music has to be the Hamilton. No. It'd be Miracle Sounds music right now. I'm going with
nice.
His music right now. Right now. Of all time, forget it. Favorite comic book? Gotta go with The Unbeatable Squirrel Girl Beats Up the Marvel Universe. Mwah, that's so great.
I'm reading Monstrous right now.
Ooh, do you like it?
You gotta pick it up. It's super cool and weird and hardcore. Yeah. The art is out of this world. Yeah, it's great.
I know. It's like such an interesting, kind of greenish copper like aesthetic. Like there's all through it. Such a cool like color palette and art style.
Yeah, and speaking of which, my partner's reading and really into The Wicked and the Divine.
Oh, that's also so good.
everybody's raving about, and I need to sit down and read because. Yeah. I love that you said that Sonic 3 with the Knuckles attachment. That makes me so happy. That's such a funny answer for favorite game.
It's
like this like gimmicky cartridge. It's like, yes.
That was DLC before DLC sucked. I'm not going to.
Old games have always had weird stuff like that.
I will accept no slander towards Sonic 3 and Knuckles. You want to say Sonic 1, 2, afterward 3 is bad? Go ahead. But the music, you know. You're supersonic. You're essentially a Super Saiyan. Knuckles is like, not today, homie. Takes your shit. You gotta go. Rescue your animals. Get your emeralds. You blow up Eggman's spaceship. Oh, what's that? There's a whole 6 more levels and more emeralds and another super form? The music?
Just
come on.
Say no more. the weirdest thing about Sonic and Knuckles to me was that Knuckles could do spin dash, and that ability apparently never carried on to any of the rest of the canon.
You
can just
game.
Spin dash in that game, and no other game he can do it. It's like, why can't he spin dash? He can go as fast as Sonic. And it's like, then they were like, oh, we need to retcon this because like this messes our whole world up.
It's kind of messed up that everyone's as fast as Sonic, and that's his only skill.
Yeah.
Yet everyone else can fly.
Yeah. Well, I guess Tails can also do it, but nobody care about Tails.
He just starts spinning around after a while. Like, I can spin in a circle. Like, okay, buddy, that's cool.
Tails is like a non-entity. Sorry, Tails.
You know what? Chevy, you just inspired me to add another question to our rapid fire. So, applause to that.
Hey, wait, I gotta go.
Well, okay,
it's my turn.
Do yours, and then I'll add my other question afterwards.
Cool.
All right, let's go.
No, it's cool. Write your question, whatever. No.
All right. I'll be able to edit it out now.
Okay, so favorite book, I'm going to cheat and also steal Carry On because I'm like staring pathetically around my living room and cannot see another book within eyeshot on any of my bookshelves that I liked more. I'm going to go with Captain America the Winter Soldier for movie.
It's a good movie.
Terrible hipster answer for game is, at least in terms of video games, there is a 4th Lord of the Rings like turn-based video game that came out after the other, like that had nothing to, almost nothing to do with the main storyline of Lord of the Rings. It was like about like six, like just characters that didn't even exist in the actual Lord of the Rings canon. Like just like they had names that kind of sounded like Lord of the Rings characters, and they all fit into the different, like there was a ranger and a rider of Rohan and like a dwarf, and like it was called Lord of the Rings: The Third Age. And I loved it so much. It was just like every once in a while I'll sit down and play it again if I have like a console around, because it's, I don't know what keeps me coming back to this like very poorly, it's not poorly animated, but it's like 2001 realistic.
Ooh,
animated.
Polygons.
So yeah, there's a lot of polygons.
I love how specific that was. That's great.
Yeah. So in comic book, I'll say Bitch Planet.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I've been meaning to get that one. Paper Girls or Paper something.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
Paper Girls, right?
That's another one. Yeah, that one and Bitch Planet.
Have you read
both
it?
I'm interested in. Not yet.
I haven't read it either. It's on my. I have it on hold at the library, but there are 35 people ahead of me.
Oh, nice.
So it'll be a while.
Does your library do like? Does it have like an app?
I'm in Manhattan, so in the New York Public Library System, and. You can put holds on online and it tells you how.
Yeah. Yeah. I use like OverDrive.
Yeah. They have their own like dedicated app.
Yeah.
Like,
I guess they're super fancy. Yeah.
But everything's run through either 3M or OverDrive. So it's still the same thing.
Cool. Cool beans.
Very nice. And any music?
Or is music. It Hamilton? Yeah, probably Hamilton. Les Mis also.
Solid.
Very
solid. Okay.
Alright, now
real quick, Steph, does this anything you're really digging right now on our show notes, is that a rapid fire question or is that more of just a hey, ask it if it's in vogue?
I think that's just a like let's start the conversation off kind
of
thing.
Cool.
But you can throw it out if you want to.
Nope. We're gonna say it. I wrote yellow in the show notes. Okay, so Chevy, you mentioned some Sonic stuff, and I need to take the occasion, and I've been meaning to ask these people. So here it is. You're the debut, so fill all the accolades you need. If you could be a crappy animal friend in the Sonic the Hedgehog universe, what kind of animal would you be?
Probably a platypus or a shark.
Chevy the shark. I love it.
I like a shark because he couldn't even like take part in all the story that took on place on land. He'd only be in like the episodes where they were underwater. And he'd be like, hey, I finally get to show up.
What up, guys?
Like waving his tail from like the river.
Yeah.
Then Sonic falls in and drowns.
Yeah. And a platypus because... I'd only be a platypus because I would love to see just like how they would draw a platypus. Because like Sonic doesn't look like a hedgehog. Oh, Knuckles does not even look anything like an echidna. It's like someone described an echidna to them and then they forgot and then they drew him. And so I just love to see how they drew a platypus. He'd be like, he'd have like two heads and be like, he'd have like a super long tongue and like, that wouldn't make any sense. It'd be great. So I'd be like him and people would be like, man, what is this? Oh, I hate this character. He's just so dumb.
Chevy Ray, congratulations on being the first person in all of our episodes to get through all the rapid fire questions.
Oh man, you mean you're done? Oh jeez.
That's all we have. They have never gone that quickly, and that was impressive.
Yeah, I love trying to think on the spot like that. It's fun.
Well, okay, then one last one. Do you have any questions for us? That's the hardest one.
Who's your next guest going to be?
Oh,
that's
literally impossible.
Okay. Who do you want your next guest to be?
Lin-Manuel Miranda.
We have a lot of interesting people like kind of on the ropes right now, like still just kind of lining things up, so.
Cool.
So we're looking at some people that are kind of like on the, I guess, on the edge of social justice games, Twitter. We have some people that are in literature, that sort of thing. So Steph and I have pretty different interests, but we're trying to converge them a little bit.
Yeah.
Cool. Well,
awesome.
I think you've survived our show with pretty much without a scratch.
Yeah, thanks. That was fun. I was like, talk about games, talk about Eichenfeld. We done? All right, let's go on to Hamilton and Sonic the Hedgehog. Let's go!
That's the fun part.
I always love that casualness, getting to have a little fun. So thanks. Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, that's the hope. So, dear listeners, if you're listening, you're like, holy shit, Icon Fell sounds awesome, or Chevy just sounds awesome, I want to hear more what he's saying. Where could they find you on the internet if that's cool?
Best place to find me is on Twitter. I'm on there 24/7. It's at Chevy Ray. You'll probably see it in the show notes.
Absolutely.
Also, you can go to my website, which is chevyray.ca. All my games are on there. You can look at some of the stuff I've done. Some of them are playable, some of them aren't. You can also, I've got a thing on also like what tools I use to make my games with, and some other cool things on my website you can check out.
Excellent. Listeners, go check that out. This is a ringing endorsement from yours truly.
And I happily accept emails as well. I usually answer pretty quickly, so.
Yes, I can definitely thank you for that.
Yeah, we can attest.
So, if you are like, hey, character reveal sounds pretty dope, this is my first time listening, I think I should check this out. You want to hear more from us, I think my great co-host, Steph, might have some insight to that for you.
Yeah, I can answer that question. So, if you want to hear more from our podcast, you can go to characterreveal.simplecast.fm to listen to all of our episodes directly. You can also subscribe on Google Play, on Stitcher. You can find us on Facebook by searching for Character Reveal, and on Twitter by searching for Character Rev. It's Character R-E-V with two R's in the middle. If you like what you're hearing from one of the two of us, but not the other, you can follow Dom on Twitter and Tumblr, and pretty much anywhere else on the internet, at Brother Dom, with A, not an E-R.
You won't find me with the E-R.
You can find me on Twitter at Captain Steph. You can find me on Tumblr at The Snow Queer. And you can read words that both of us have written about various like intersectional feminist social justice-y geeky things at the Lady Geek Girl and Friends blog, which is ladygeekgirl.wordpress.com. And that's about it.
That is it. Record time too. It's almost like we're getting good at this. So we want to extend so much gratitude to our great guest, Chevy Ray. Thank you so much for being on here with us.
That was my pleasure.
And we hope you had a good time. And listeners, we hope you enjoyed it as well. We keep trying to bring you that awesome content, trying to bring you character reveals and geekly reveals. You know, things have been a little wild in the last few weeks, but we're trying to keep a schedule. Hope you're liking it. Send us feedback when you can. And until next time, see you later.
Bye.
Bye.